May it please the Court. My name is Robert Muse from the Thomas More Law Center. It's my pleasure to represent the plaintiff's appellants in this case. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. Now, this case presents what we believe to be a very important First Amendment issue, and that's whether the government can prohibit a private citizen's political speech on a public street next to a middle school because school officials consider the speaker's message to be disruptive to the school. And here, in this case, the government's justification for doing so was invoking Section 626.8 of the California Penal Code. And we contend under well-established principles of the First Amendment that the government does not have the power to invoke or to make those sort of content-based restrictions of private citizens' political speech in a public forum, regardless of the fact that it happens to be adjacent to a middle school.
What content-based restriction was made here?
Your Honor, I think the evidence plainly demonstrates that the restriction was on the plaintiff's pictures. And as the case law, Forsyth County makes very plain that a listener's or a viewer's reaction to speech is not a content-neutral basis for prohibiting it. So if it's the message, in this case the pictures, that are causing a reaction, that in effect is a content-based restriction on speech. So by restricting the pictures...
I have several questions. One of them is, do we have to worry at all about whether the statute was properly or improperly applied? And there's a lot of discussion in the briefs about whether it was a lawful business, wasn't a lawful business. Does any of that matter? I mean, isn't our ultimate question whether, assuming that the statute applies, is it constitutional to do this? Why does the rest of that matter?
Well, I think, Your Honor, from the court's perspective, I think you can either decide this case more narrowly in terms of a misapplication of this particular
statute. No, but we can't. We're a federal court. How can we decide something based on a misapplication of a statute? Why don't we just say that's the statute and can they do this?
Well, obviously, that is what they did. And so at the end of the day, the question is whether...
I was just a little befuddled about why there was so much discussion about the meaning of whether they properly applied the statute. I don't understand why it matters.
Well, the judge, obviously, below considered it to be a proper application, and he focused on the unlawful business. And so, in effect, by applying that statute to
I suppose it wasn't. But why does that matter? That's what I'm trying to understand. You're coming here with a constitutional claim.
That's correct.
Which is they can't do this to us.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
And whether they did it validly or invalidly under state law just seems to me to be irrelevant. Is there any reason? Am I missing something?
Well, again, I think, we made a point to this in the brief, and relying on Granard in this respect, where the government may have a significant interest in prohibiting conduct that disrupts a school during its school session. Well, the facts show that in this case, that they were actually engaging in their activity prior to the school arriving.
You're not facially challenging the statute in any respect at all, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You're not facially challenging the statute in any respect.
That's correct, because the statute itself has an express provision saying that it should not be used to impinge the lawful exercise of constitutional rights.
Yeah.
So our view, the California legislature has made it plain that this statute should not be used in the way that it was,
all
in fact.
It's just clarifying
used
to me to get the statute out of the way, because it doesn't seem to be right.
Let me ask you this. We have a Supreme Court case, the Granard case, that says that various forms of otherwise protected speech-related activity or speech can be prohibited if they're disruptive to a school. We know that. The real question then is, okay, how much is the disruption? And how much disruption was there? We had some real testimony as to that. I mean, there was real evidence of disruption. And is your argument is that it just wasn't enough?
Well, I think 2 points, Your Honor. With regard to the Granard case, I mean, they made it plain that they were applying a content-neutral basis. So, for example,
the statute is content-neutral. And are you arguing that there simply was not enough disruption to come within the Supreme Court case?
I would say, first of all, to answer that in two ways. First, regardless of the disruption, if it's a content, you can't make those sort of content-based restrictions. Granard made very clear that the government has no power to restrict activity because of its message.
I understand that. It's not my question. My question is, assuming that the statute is content neutral, are you arguing that there is insufficient disruption?
That would be the second part. I think, first of all, even if it's content neutral, it can't be applied in a content-based manner. If your basis for saying there's disruption is the content of the message, even Granard says that's not a legitimate basis for doing so. Secondly,
content is hard in a way. It sounds like it's easy because we're so accustomed to talking about it that way, but content and manner of expression are often quite closely linked. I mean, you could have had, somebody outside talking in a soft voice to anyone who was willing to approach, arguing sort of gently against, and so on. You could do it that way, or you could have a picture on a truck that drives past with a security vehicle following it. Let me ask you this, and I understand it's not your case, but let's assume that this truck was being driven past a kindergarten through three, and in big letters it said, "This could have been you." And we get undisputed evidence that the first and second graders, who have just now been able to learn to read, are crying almost uncontrollably. Now, that sounds like a disruption. Are you saying that because it's content-based, because they're reacting to the mode of expression of the content, that you get to do that outside of school?
You know, and I think under Gradner, that's the answer, because you run into, I mean, that's the typical difficulty we have. I mean, we obviously have a First Amendment, we have a free society that needs breathing space, and I understand it's a very difficult, a difficult question. It's one that obviously it strikes at you viscerally, but at the end of the day, are we going to allow certain content-based restrictions?
There are various kinds of you. I mean, they're adults,
sure.
They're high school students. My example was deliberately chosen to go the other direction. I did K through 3. You've got middle schoolers. I mean, kids at different ages react very differently. And what may be perfectly appropriate and mode of expression to an adult may or may not be to a small child. You've got to concede that.
Certainly. Yeah. But looking at Granted, Your Honor, I just think that Granted makes it plain that the content cannot serve as that basis even if there is a disruption. I think that's the first layer, but I do want to get to that second point because I don't think there was a material or substantial disruption under the facts of this case.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes, ma'am.
We have here a moving truck, right? So, A, it's moving, right? There are all these picketing cases that say moving, I don't know why, but they say it. Moving makes it different. Second of all, you have a very big truck, as I understand it, with a very big picture. Is there some analogy between a very big truck with a big picture and noise? In other words, I have a vague recollection that in Mattson, or one of those cases, there was some discussion about how big the signs were and where they could be seen from. Does it make a difference that this is sort of like shouting, except it's shouting silently? With a big truck, does that make a difference in terms of whether this is dealing with the non-speech aspects? Because a lot of what was concerning them was the truck was moving. There was a very big sign. If you had a little sign and a little placard, maybe the reaction would have been different.
All right. I guess a couple of points to that. One is certainly where they were driving, trucks of that size were permissible. So in terms of the size,
but they weren't driving around in circles. My understanding is that this truck was just going around in circles.
It was a pretty. I don't know if you had an opportunity to view the video evidence that was presented, but it's a pretty large loop around. I forget how many times passed through. But in fact, if the truck was moving, it probably provided less of a security issue because they're traveling, they're obeying the traffic laws, they're ensuring that it's moving safely. It's not blocking. It's not obstructing. When you get into the question of okay, the larger picture is more effective speech. The smaller picture is ineffective speech. So,
intrusive and more. Especially when you're dealing with children, more likely to, to convey something other than the content of it.
But where do you draw? Is it, a 12 by 12 is okay, a 4 by 4 is okay, a 25 by 25?
I mean, that's a problem in Granite, too, how loud is too loud. Measured by the actual disruption, as I understand it.
Right, but again, that's the loudness is not the same. The case law is plain that a reaction to the speech, in this case a picture, a silent picture, that is a content-based restriction. I mean, the case law says that. I don't know how we get around that. Rznoznik, as well as another case, where they said even just trying to shield minors from these pictures.
Well, Rznoznik is probably the closest case to it, actually.
And it made very plain that you can't, as soon as the government, and even Cohen, I think, I mean, there's some of the cases have said, well, what about, Cohen, under the school speech cases, Fraser, Hazelwood, Tinker, Cohen perhaps couldn't wear his jacket in the school, but under Cohen, you can't prohibit Cohen from wearing his jacket walking on the public street outside the school. And I think that's
I'm not sure that's true of Cohen. I mean, Cohen's obviously not that case. And what we're talking about in the Granard case is disruption of activities that go on in a school. So I'm not sure whether it's on the street and disrupting what's going on in the school or actually within the school building is the constitutionally determinative line.
Well, I think the determinative line is first and foremost, is if you're basing it on the content. I mean, that Grainard made very clear the ordinance gives no license to punish anyone because of what he is saying. I mean, the court made that specifically plain.
Another interesting question is, you, in fact, did not plan to be there while school was going on. Your clients were planning to get out of there. They didn't because they were stopped.
That's correct.
Sort of ironic. But suppose that wasn't their scheme. Suppose their scheme was to keep driving around all during school and there were big windows and people would be, the students, while they were in class, would be distracted by these pictures. Would your position be the same?
My fundamental position on the First Amendment issue is that you can't make those sort of content-based.
So you would say they could just keep going around, and or they could stand across the street with huge banners that everybody in the school could see, and classes could be disrupted, and that would be okay.
Well, like what, you know, what Cohen says, you avert your eyes, you close the blinds, you silence the heckler. I mean,
your position is, your client could stand outside or have a truck parked outside, maybe even flashing lights, so long as they're not making any noise, forcing the school, if it wants to, you know, have the math class go forward, to close the blinds and turn on the lights?
Again, Your Honor, I think under the case law, those are the sort of costs that come with a free society with speech. If you're making the same, if it's something other than the content of the message,
I just don't think the case law gets you that far. That is to say that you can have some big visual distraction, irrespective of its content. I mean, it can be your content or somebody else's content that forces the school to close the blinds and turn on the lights if they want to have math class.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, Grainard sort of, I think, sidestepped the issue as it was made plain, I think, in one of the footnotes, that it wasn't an as-applied challenge, it was a facial challenge. So, I mean, that's a difficult question. But, I don't think under these facts we even have to go to that far, because for a number of reasons. One is they were operating their speech activity prior to the start of the school day, which Grainard said is permissible when the student, faculty, audience is entering and leaving. And you got to look at what was the fact of the disruption. The evidence is two or three girls were crying out of a class about 1,900. The 10 or 12 boys were planning on throwing rocks, and they said one honors class spent some time talking about their activity. Sounds like a civic lesson. If you look at the objective facts, though, the class has started on time, the class has ended on time, no class was canceled, and the class schedule didn't change.
Right,
and if you look at the video...
But you're looking for a broader... This is a prospective case. What injunction are you looking for?
I'm sorry?
This is a prospective case at this point.
Yes. I mean, first of all, we think that the application of the statute is unconstitutional as applied to their activity. I mean, I think the court can decide this broadly or narrowly.
Why do the exact details matter? Doesn't what matter what an injunction would look like? What do you want enjoined?
They want to be able to engage in their private...
Regardless of the disruption, I presume.
Well, Your Honor, we would be satisfied with doing it prior to the start of the school day. It fits within Grainard. So, I mean,
the disruption facts were entirely different.
Yes.
If there had been masses of kids out there crying and screaming and falling on the ground, you'd still have the same position.
You would, Your Honor, I think, under the First
Amendment. Your position would be the same.
I think the cases make it that way.
You want the injunction to read past any public school, K through 3?
You know, I think it's when you're on a public street. I mean, I don't think there's any way around it. How do you draw those particular distinctions?
You know,
when you're
that's asking us to go well beyond the actual facts of this case.
And all we've asked in the brief is, you don't have to go that broadly. I mean, because they don't go to the elementary schools. They go to the middle schools and to the high schools.
But we have to decide whether to go that broadly if we were to rule in your favor, because we've got to draft an injunction or give the district court instructions as to how the injunction is supposed to be drafted.
That's correct. And that's why I'm saying...
So how is it supposed to be drafted?
You keep going from broad and back to narrow. If you look at the facts of this case, they limit their activity. I mean, what they want to do is what their activity is.
Let me ask it this way to be clear. Draft the injunction you want and you think you're entitled to. Just give me a quick little sketch of it.
That the government is prohibited under the First Amendment from prohibiting plaintiffs' peaceful, silent, non-destructive political speech activity on the public streets adjacent to the middle schools or high schools in the state of California. Because that's where they go to.
During school as well as before school. And you're being admirably, I think, consistent in your position. I'm not suggesting to push you away from it, but because I think you're taking the position you need to take to...
I think the broad question is a hard one, Ron. I really do think it's a hard one for this court. Yeah. But that's why I'm saying that the narrow one will help us do what we want to do.
But the injunction you just articulated, the injunction that you asked for in the brief, and the only in your complaint, the only injunction that makes sense given your legal position would apply during school, and would apply regardless of the degree of disruption. Right? I mean, it has to be because...
I think the case law commands that, Your Honor, but I'm saying on these facts and what we want to do, I don't know if you necessarily have to draft such a broad injunction.
Does it make any difference? I mean, there are many things one can say about schools being different, but one of them is the age of the kids. And the other one is, and I'm not a big fan of captive audience theories, but this is a captive audience in the sense that they are legally required to go to school to be there. No one's mentioned that feature in anywhere in this case law, but does that matter that these kids don't have any option to not be there?
And I don't think it raises the level of captive audience like in a bus, where I think was an example that they've used. So I mean, again, if you look at the lay of the ground and everything, I think it's hard to say that this is a captive audience in that respect. I understand that they're required to be there under the law, and I think that's where Granard allows these content-neutral time, place, manner restrictions to take into account that particular factor of the disruption of the school. But I don't see how Granard gets you to be able to do content-based restrictions. I mean, we're kind of back to it again, but it's that factor. The factors of the school and the age and everything else.
Content-based, to me, and maybe this is what Judge Fletcher was saying too, it isn't exactly what you mean, and I understand that's where the case law breaks down, but you're really saying the problem here is that the message was a disruption. I mean, and it isn't that there was something else disruptive other than the message. I'm not quite sure that's true, but that's really your argument. What they were concerned about is they were going to get upset by what we were saying or what we were showing, not that they were going to get upset by the noise or something like that. So whether that's content-based or not content-based, it is different than Granard, because...
Yes. Yes. And you know, the examples Granard made for disruption, again, is, you know, this boisterous outpouring where the classes stop. And so objectively, we don't even have that level of disruption. And it becomes
But you see, this. I mean, now that we've kind of pinned it down, your position would be the same if you did.
Yes, it would be. I can't see how you can read the cases any other way. And I didn't write those cases, but that's. I don't see any other way.
Very briefly, and assuming you'll get a little extra time to address the stop issue.
Right, and obviously it ties to whether or not they had the you know, properly stopped them in the first instance. We had a 75-minute. A detention. Certainly, this was, you know, beyond the momentary stop that is authorized under the line of cases in Terry. They took their driver's license. They ran license checks. They ran warrants checks. They weren't wanted for any criminal activity. And obviously, from our perspective, all they were doing was engaging in peaceful, non-obstructive political speech in a public forum. They had to let them go.
Yeah, but they were trying to figure out, you know, they're trying to figure out what to do. So they call the supervisors. They say, you know, I've never been in this, I never had this case before. I mean, they know how to deal with DUIs. They know how to deal with broken taillights. But this one's new, so they call the supervisors. So what's wrong with that?
Well, there's cases even where, you know, in the Supreme Court where they wait 75 minutes for a drug dog to arrive, and that was too extensive. If they, with just reasonable suspicion at that point, which is our belief that they only had, they had to let them go. They can't.
They did let them go.
After 75 minutes, but it was really a fishing expedition trying to find something. They stumbled upon this one statute.
What relief are you asking for this?
That's a declaration that was a violation, and all we've asked here throughout this is nominal damages, a declaration and nominal damages.
You're not asking for an injunction.
The injunction, I think, would go to the First Amendment issue, really, Your Honor, because how do you enjoin them from not detaining them in the future? I mean, who's to say if they broke a traffic violation?
Which has recognized the legitimacy of a stop to investigate not the facts but the law? I would think that they're supposed to know the law. They're not supposed to investigate it after they stop you.
I think that's where it comes out. Even, you know, with the qualified immunity question, it's kind of odd. They impute them with the knowledge of what the case law, in fact, says. And I think that would be my answer in terms of whether or not they're holding them just to figure out what it is that they've done. If they, you know, they see these pictures, and I think in their minds it's like, these things can't be here, so let's find a way to get rid of them. And they stumbled upon
this
66.
This problem is sort of an artifact of the Supreme Court case law that says that even if you don't have probable cause to stop them for whatever you stop them for, it's okay if you had probable cause in something else. So here they didn't have any or reasonable suspicion. Here they didn't have any reasonable suspicion of anything when they stopped them because they didn't know what the law was.
That's right.
And later it turned out they came up with something.
Well, they might have had reasonable suspicion.
A vehicle that looks like a police vehicle.
Yeah. How about impersonating a police officer? I mean, it's very clear from the look of that vehicle that it looks like an unmarked police car, unmarked in the sense that there doesn't say police on the side, but with the exception of no police on the side. I mean, I looked at that. I said, of course that's a cop car. Everybody knows that's a cop car. And, in fact, on the tape, you've got this guy in the BMW who stops, walks back, and says, are you police? I understand precisely why he's asking that, because it looks like a police car. Well, if I'm a policeman and I see somebody driving around in a car that looks like a police car, I mean, impersonating a police officer comes to mind.
And I'm sitting here, and if they, you know, to make that initial stop and to ask the initial questions, that's not problematic. I mean, if they have reasonable suspicion, okay, look, there's a car, it looks like a police officer, let's go see who's in this thing. They stop them, they ask them a few questions, check the licenses, see what they're doing, ask them what they're doing. The testimony is that they knew they were engaging in political speech. That vehicle, and my client's very, very careful about this because they know that they're a huge target because what they do is very controversial, is to follow the laws.
Why does your clients need that vehicle?
It's for the...
It also had a cage in the back, too.
It does. Actually,
prisoners.
At one point, they hired...
Does your client take prisoners?
My client doesn't take prisoners. If I could ask, Your Honor, the...
Well, what do they do with the prisoners?
They don't take prisoners, Your Honor. I'm not sure. Did you say what do they do with the prisoners?
Yeah.
They don't take prisoners. The vehicle, when they first started this program, they researched very closely what could and could not be put on the vehicle, and they ensure that it passed all the legal requirements. And they've done that, and it's obvious because even after they searched this thing, they realized that they did pass
all.
Why do they need a vehicle?
Because they get death threats all the time. They get threats all the time for what they're doing. The vehicle does several things. I think it helps deter people from wanting to cause violence because you have another set of eyes back there watching what's going on. The reason why they have the video camera is so that we can refute allegations that were brought up in this case.
Why do they need a vehicle that most people would think was a police vehicle?
It's a security vehicle. They used to hire off-duty police officers to actually ride along with them who could perhaps use their arrest authority, but that became too costly for them, so they stopped doing it. But they didn't reconfigure the vehicles. And there's nothing unlawful about the vehicle. The vehicle also helps the larger truck move in traffic. It provides when you have to change lanes or on the highways, he can change lane first, allow for the other vehicle to go over. So actually, they're doing everything they can to be safe.
Did they use the lights? On the roof of the vehicle?
I don't know what we call it with the lights on the roof, but they don't use the lights other than the lights for if the vehicle's broken down for safety.
Permit to put those lights on the roof of the vehicle.
They didn't. Your Honor, there's.
Can I put those on my vehicle?
You probably could, Your Honor. Like I said, I know they researched this issue very closely to make sure that they weren't violating the law when they configured their vehicle, and the vehicle does not violate the law. And I think the defendants will acknowledge that there's nothing about the configuration of that vehicle that's unlawful. And I know I'm way over my time. I did save some time for rebuttal, so thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jennifer Lehman on behalf of the Sheriff's Department defendants. We have a co-defendant, so I'm not sure how to split the time, maybe half and half, if that works well for everybody.
Well, that's something you should work out.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It's something you should work out with your
co-defendant. We'll split half and half, if that's okay. I just want to talk a little bit about the Fourth Amendment issues that are addressed to the deputies. The deputies had reasonable suspicion to stop them based on the call that they received from the school, as well as the concern regarding the police vehicle. I think that
What was the call? The call was that there's a truck out there that has an obnoxious something on there that's disturbing people.
But the record shows that the deputies understood that to mean that there was a disturbance at the school. They understood that the school called because of this truck, and they believed it to be
but
because of the disturbance.
What did they have probable cause of?
They had reasonable suspicion,
Reasonable suspicion of?
Reasonable suspicion, too, that there was a disturbance at the school, that they were violating the codes that provide that you cannot cause a disturbance at the school.
Well, if that's true, what took them 75 minutes to figure out?
Well, they had to go to they had to inspect the vehicle. They had to talk to the school. They summoned a sergeant because they, admittedly, this was a situation that they had not faced before.
Because they didn't know what they had a reasonable suspicion of. They didn't know what statute to apply.
They did not know, well, they were concerned about it. They wanted to do it by the book, Your Honor. So they wanted to talk to the supervisor. They wanted to talk to the
Did you know of any case in which it was okay to stop people for an hour or so? Let's take out the first 15 minutes when they were actually investigating the car and checking these people out. After that, is there any case that says you can keep people around an hour while you figure out the law as opposed to while you investigate the facts?
I think they were investigating
They knew everything they needed to know at that point, right?
I think I believe they're investigating the facts, but we do cite some cases.
What
in our
facts
brief.
Were they investigating?
What the disturbance was at the school, to bring out the school's administrator to talk to the plaintiffs to tell them what the disturbance was at the school.
My impression is, and it's only an impression, that they didn't actually even call that guy for about an hour.
I don't believe that that's in the record, but I will submit to Your Honor.
What was the call that came to the deputy?
That there was a truck circling the school, and the deputies understood that to mean that it was causing a disturbance at the school.
Do we know who made the call?
An administrator, a vice principal, I believe, at the school.
Were they also getting calls, or were they getting a call from neighbors or parents?
You'll have to address that question to the,
I think they
to the
were.
School's council.
Yeah.
That is, I believe that that is true.
Yeah, so it's a little. I tried to figure this out as to which call or calls they were responding to. I think by the time they showed up, there had been more than one call.
But the deputies understood it to be a call from the school, which certainly led a little more credence to the fact that there was a disturbance.
Now, in the end, the deputies decide that there has been a violation of the statute. Does your argument change when they say, well, we weren't just trying to figure out if there had been a violation of the law? We figured out pretty early on that there might well be a violation of the law. We were just trying to figure out what the policy of our department was going to be because, you know, a lot of times there's a violation and you let the guy go, you know,
exactly.
With a warning, you know. Oh, yeah, you were going 65 in a 60-mile-an-hour zone. Well, I'll let it go this time.
That is true, Your Honor. And also,
they're trying to get advice as to, you know, okay, what's going to be the policy on this one?
Yes, Your Honor. And also under 626.8, you can have a school administrator come and tell the individuals that they should leave and that they're going to invoke the section. And I believe this is what they did in this case. They asked Mr. Roberts to come out and tell the plaintiffs that to leave because they were causing a disruption at the school. And again, all of this took time. As to the search, there was clear consent.
Can we go on to the First Amendment issue?
Sure.
I think perhaps we should go on, especially if you're only going to talk for 10 minutes.
I think what plaintiff's counsel is trying to do is to apply non-school First Amendment law to the school setting. And the cases are clear that the schools can, in fact, have an obligation to prevent disruption at the school. I think the Jeglin case says that you don't even have to have a disruption as long as you reasonably anticipate that a disruption is going to occur. In this case, there already was a disruption. Was it protests and every kid in hysteria? Probably not. But do they have to wait to that point before the school starts to act? I would submit to the court that the cases say no. And I think I will leave the rest of that discussion to counsel for the school, unless you all would rather have me as the target.
Well, you're the ones who are enforcing the law, it seems to me, and who are construing the law as applying to this, and seem to me to be the primary defendants, because especially because the injunction is not limited to that's requested will not be limited to the school. I mean, it could be, I suppose, but that's not what they're asking for. They're asking for an injunction that says that your department, nowhere in L.A. County, can stop them from driving their truck around schools and doing this.
Well, the Sheriff's Department has to rely in large part on what the schools say. They have to rely on whether the schools say that there is a disruption. I don't think that the case law puts on the deputies the onus to go inside the school and say, I'm sorry, are you disrupted? Are you disrupted? I think they have to rely on the administrator.
Suppose there was somebody who was across the street from the school on a public street handing out leaflets saying that the teachers in the school are being badly paid and you know, they're going to go on strike in 3 weeks if you don't do something. If there isn't an agreement. And suppose a bunch of kids got very upset about that because they were going to go to school. Would that statute apply to that?
I think the administrators are in the best position to decide.
If the administrators decided that nobody could be across the street from the school peacefully handing out leaflets protesting the wages at the school, that would be a reason for you to arrest them.
I think that if the administrators say that there is a disruption caused to the students, that the deputies have to rely on that.
Overall position is that any message, when there's not a big sign and there's not any noise and there's not a truck moving around and you have presumptively First Amendment protected speech, and the reason I chose leafleting is because there's lots of case law that says that leafleting is sort of the least objectionable form of on-street speech. And even so, if people were upset by the message, by what was on the piece of paper, at the school, that would be and with a, you would regard you would think you had a basis for arresting people and telling them to go away.
If there was a material disruption of the school and that was what was being represented to the deputies, then I would say that they probably would.
So you see no distinction between public street speech near a school and speech in a school?
I think that both the statute and the case law says that that the rules that apply to school also apply to the ways that are adjacent to the school.
What case law is that?
I believe it was Granted, and also
Granted was dealing with action, i.e. noise. All right, I'm asking whether when it's the – you think Granted says even when it's the message? In other words, you think in Granted if these people who were doing a civil rights protest – had been across the street from the school with little placards making absolutely no noise, and there was one of them saying the school was violating, there are civil rights problems at the school, that Granted would have come out the same way?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you think that Granted would come out the same way if there was no noise, no crowds, and simply a message across the street from the school? But people were upset.
If there was a substantial disruption to the school, I would say yes.
Well, I don't know. I don't see how you can take that position. Pretty extreme.
Again, this is all about the disruption at the school. It could have been a movie star on a truck riding around and around the school. If it had caused that kind of disturbance, I think that the school would have been right to call for assistance and ask that the disruption stop.
So if the students are told by leaflets that the teachers are being unfairly treated, that wages are too low, that their working conditions are horrendous, and the kids get upset by that and raise this issue in the school, that would be a violation of the statute.
I can see that that's a more problematic case. Unfortunately, that is not our case.
Granted says clearly, government has no power to restrict such activity because of its message. So what do you make of that? You don't think that applies to this or to the hypotheticals we're giving you?
Well, in this case, the message kind of is the disruption. The message is what caused the disruption. So
then you're restricting activity because of its message.
Again, whatever the message is, again, it could be a movie star, it could be anybody. As long as there is a disruption, I think the school acts as it should, or has the right to act as it did. The court have any other questions?
Well, isn't this a time, place, and manner restriction set forth in the statute?
I would suggest that it is.
They would have come there after school started and circled the school with a van and the message on the van. Would that have been all right?
You said after school started?
Yeah, after it started.
Again, I think it all just depends on the reaction, the disruption caused at the school. And it's impossible for me to say what would have happened if they had come 20 minutes later, if they had come 20 minutes before.
Suppose a locality passed an ordinance saying that you can't have any billboards, political billboards, that are visible from the school because that might cause people to disagree about political issues and cause disruption. Would that be okay?
I think that that's problematic, Your Honor, until there is some kind of disruption to support the notion that there is a disruption.
Let's say the kids are in school and they're arguing and boisterously and maybe some fisticuffs. Would that be enough to take the billboard down?
Is this a wholesale to an entire county, no billboards by any school? I would think that would be overbroad.
But this is wholesale. My understanding is that this is wholesale, i.e., you said that whether it's disruptive or not is up to the school, and it doesn't have to actually be disruptive as long as they think it could be disruptive. So my understanding is that these plaintiffs have stopped doing this because they don't feel like getting arrested, and it sounds like they're in pretty good their fear of getting arrested is not ephemeral.
I think the record actually is that they've done it since, and they did it before with no issue, and they did it after with no issue. And just on this one
they
occasion.
They do say in their undisputed facts that they didn't have stopped doing it. Was I wrong about that?
I believe there's some testimony that they have continued to do it, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. It's in our separate statement of facts. So on this one occasion.
They were never actually prosecuted, is that right?
No, Your Honor, they were not. Are there any other questions?
So you say it's being, as far as your client is aware of, it's been the same display is continuing.
As far as I know, Your Honor, I believe that the plaintiffs continue to drive their trucks. And
And what was different here was that the Sheriff's Department got a call from the school that there was a disruption. A disruption that was going on in the school because of this vehicle, these two vehicles that were out circling the school.
Yes, Your Honor, that there had been no issue with this prior to that one occasion, that on this one occasion they got a call saying that there was a disruption, so they acted.
And what exactly was the record show about the phone call? I thought the call basically said there's a an objectionable truck with an objectionable sign driving around. Did it say there was a disruption? Did it say what the disruption was?
The actual call from the vice principal says there's a truck circling the school and it's causing a disturbance. The text that was sent to the deputies says there is a truck circling the school, but they understood that to mean that there was a disturbance. So somewhere in the translation between the dispatcher and the deputies, it was translated to just there's a truck circling
the school. Where in the record is the content of the telephone call?
It's not in the record, Your Honor. I don't believe that. Just the text that was submitted to the deputies.
It's not in the record. It's not in the record. Okay.
Well, all these calls are recorded, aren't they?
They are, Your Honor.
But it's not in the record.
It's not.
We don't have much of a position then. You're saying that they came because they were told there was a disruption, but we don't have any idea whether they were told that there was a disruption.
There is the text of the call that they received, that it's typed to them in their cars.
But you said that one didn't say anything about a disruption.
It did not, but they understood it to mean a disruption. Okay. Because they figured, why else would the school call? And that, Your Honor, is in the record, what the deputies believed to be the call.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Julie Mullane on behalf of defendant or appellee Art Roberts.
I don't understand how Art Roberts has any interest in this, frankly, at this point. I mean, they're looking for a prospective injunction, not simply for this school, against the police department, the sheriff's department doing this. I don't know what he did wrong. He just did... He wasn't the one who was enforcing the statute. So I'm a little baffled about why you have any interest in any of this.
Oh.
I
may be as well. I can argue the school district's obvious perspective. I can obviously argue the constitutional issues that the school itself was confronted with. As far as Art Roberts' actual actions, I mean, there's no dispute as to whether there was, in fact, he perceived there to be a disruption. He presented testimony that, in evidence, that students were crying, students were milling around instead of entering the school.
He also
building.
Said school began normally and everybody got everybody into the building and started school.
If he had not taken his actions, one wonders whether there would have been a further disruption. I think, in fact, that his actions in calling the police out there, they actually minimized the amount of a disruption.
It sounds to me like they maximized it. And this is the craziest thing. Because of this, the truck is then out there for an additional hour and 15 minutes instead of leaving.
But the children are in school. They're in their classes.
What does it have to do with it? With him calling? He could. The truck was still there. If it was disruptive, it was still there.
The disruption, as far as the effect of the disruption on the students itself, the students were in school at that point.
Right,
school
but
had
he got
already
them into
began.
The school.
Now,
yeah.
At various points, as the truck makes the loop around the school, the truck is visible from the classrooms. Do we know what was true with respect to the position where it was stopped? Was the truck visible from the classrooms where it was stopped during this period?
That I'm not sure on.
A lot of the time they're at a wall. A lot of times they're by the play fields. I mean, it's a great big loop around the school ground.
That's
there's
correct.
Only a small portion of that loop that's actually visible from the school windows from the classrooms.
That's correct.
But we don't know.
We don't know, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a different question. In paragraph 13 of Mr. Roberts' declaration, he talks about plaintiff's presence created an enormous disturbance to the day's routine. Specifically, many of the students would not leave the sidewalk area surrounding the school after being dropped off pursuant to school rules. Many of the students who were upset or angry created a commotion which drew the presence of still other students. I had serious concerns with the heavy traffic caused by parents and school buses dropping off students and the presence of hundreds of students who were upset, angry, and distracted that a traffic accident involving a student pedestrian could occur. Then in testimony, he's asked about specifically about that paragraph, and he says, but there were hundreds of students being dropped off, and they're on the sidewalks. They are a potential dash. In the period of time that I have been there, we've had 2 kids killed, and we've had 5 kids hit by cars in very similar circumstances. Now, I saw the videotape. I confess I skipped through what I thought was boring, but maybe I missed it. And the videotape is actually focused on the back of the truck rather than scanning the sidewalks. During the portion of the videotape, or rather the DVD, that I saw, I did not see hundreds of kids on the sidewalks. Is there evidence beyond the declaration that there were hundreds of kids on the sidewalks?
Well, and other than the declaration and the
right.
testimony of Mr. Roberts,
right.
no. And that's what the district court actually looked into. That particular issue and found there not to be any the fact that the video was not on Mr. Roberts has no effect on his testimony as to what he saw, what he perceived, and does not necessarily discredit
really
his testimony.
On the sidewalk either, except as it might sort of pick it up peripherally because it's focused on the back of the truck.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you can kind of get a glimpse of the sidewalk.
Just
you
a glimpse.
The crosswalk where you see kids coming across and hesitating a little bit.
Just a glimpse.
Yeah, okay.
So, do you have a position on the sort of hypotheticals that I was talking about before? That is, here we have a speech that has some conduct features. It was moving, the sign was very large, in that sense was sort of like noise. But suppose you had sort of the most classic of First Amendment speech. Somebody's a lone person standing across the street from the school handing out leaflets saying, the Bush is a murderer and the war in Iraq is a travesty. And people got upset.
I would submit that if it caused a disruption in the operation of the school, then yes, it would warrant it.
We have reams of law about the fact that people in general are supposed to, in a free society, that there's a trade-off here and that we want people to be confronted with challenging ideas and that we don't shut people up on public streets. Now, why is this different?
This is different because we're dealing with children ages 11 through 13.
Well,
what if
it's not across
interest.
The street from school? What if it's on the route to school? What if you know that a lot of children have to walk down Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena and are going to be upset if there are people out there with signs saying X?
Then the district would have no means of controlling that particular.
Well, we don't have any means of controlling this either. It's not your street. It's a public street.
But California Penal Code Section 626.8 and the Education Code Section.
All right,
section
suppose
provide.
It has a new penal code that said anywhere that there are children who might get upset on their way to school, you can't say anything that would upset them.
And again, the amount of the disruption is probably would become an issue at that point. If if it did not necessarily disrupt or interfere with the work of the school or impinge on the rights of the students, I think according to Hazelwood, there wouldn't necessarily be any right of the school officials to limit that particular expression.
Hazelwood is in a school, and it deals with students.
Yes.
Tinker is, too. I mean, there's a Supreme Court case which deals with pending now on CERT, where there were students across the street from the school, and there's an issue about whether, you know, what species of law applies to that. And you're now suggesting that the streets surrounding the school are insulated special streets.
Was that the Frederick versus Morse
yes,
case?
Right.
That particular case, I believe, is distinguishable from this particular case. There was a general, that particular scenario occurred where a student unfurled a banner, bong hits for Jesus, while the Olympic torch passed by. That particular situation dealt with a school principal who crossed the street, didn't like what was being said, specifically didn't like being what said, and suspended the plaintiff. There was general disarray at the torch passing, but there was no evidence that the general disarray or the disruption had anything to do with what plaintiff did. The absence of that disruption, I think, makes it distinguishable from the case at hand, and I think
The general rule under the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, however, is that we don't have heckler's vetoes. I mean, that's foresight in a whole lot of other cases. The fact that people are upset by a message is not usually something that we deal with under the First Amendment. We say that's your problem.
And I think the problem is in the case at hand, we're dealing with a content-neutral restriction, a proper time, place, and manner restriction that is, in fact, content-neutral. It could have been anything. It could have been pro-war. It could have been anti-war. Again, like counsel said, it could have been a movie star. It could have been a radio station
across
the street.
But that, of course, was true in Forsyth as well. The whole point of Forsyth was that somebody shouldn't have to pay because somebody else doesn't like what they're saying, whatever they're saying.
But again, I mean, we're dealing with the importance of the education system and maintaining an education system that these children are required to attend to. And again, you had previously brought up the fact that they plaintiffs had a captive audience. The fact that school is, in fact, required, children are required to go to school, basically increases the duty owed by the administration, basically, to protect that duty, the duties that were owed to the students.
Well, fascinating case.
It is a fascinating case. Thank you, Your Honors.
Three minutes, and just I want to cover a couple of points regarding the record. The message, Your Honor, that was actually received by the deputies, and it's cited on page 9 of our opening brief, the exact, and this is what they received in terms of information, anti-abortion truck with offensive language / pictures is circling the school and videotaping the school and surrounding area, end quote. That was the information that they received, how that was translated from the phone call, but that's what actually appeared to the deputies.
And the phone call is not in the record.
The phone call is not in the record because that was the information was transferred into all I can assume is that.
What about my impression that Roberts was not actually called for an hour or so? Is that right?
That, yes, Your Honor. If you on page 13 of our brief, and we cite the record sites, as we stated here, the Los Angeles County defendants did not speak to a school official until more than 1 hour into the detention of plaintiffs, and we have the record site for that. And this, quote, wasn't much of a conversation, end quote, according to Defendant Roberts himself when they went up to speak with him. So they just, after an hour, they just went up, grabbed the school official, come down, here's the statute, read it to them, tell them to go. So it was hardly much of an investigation of the facts going on in this particular case.
Let me ask you this. I read most of paragraph 13 of Principal Roberts' declaration, and then I read from his testimony. First off, just on the facts, do you contest his statement as to the number of kids that were on the sidewalk?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And you know,
on what basis do you contest that?
And you mentioned the video evidence, Your Honor. I would suggest if you maybe went through it a little slower, the peripheral view that you can see in that video camera takes you all the way to the entrance where you can see the children, the students walking into, and you can certainly see the entire sidewalk all the way to the fence, and certainly none of my clients saw this, you know, commotion of gathering. But the video evidence, and again, remember, this is a summary judgment motion against us, so all the evidence has to be viewed in light in our favor. But I think that camera shows a lot more in the periphery than what you claim it does, because I can, if you run through that slowly, you can see all the way from the sidewalk to the fence, and clearly you can even see one point when you go by the main entrance, you can see the students walking right into the building. Now, you can't see what's going on inside the building, but you certainly can see.
I saw that area. I saw that part.
And I think that, I mean, that's, to me, it refutes directly.
Yeah, let me assume the following then, because I'm not asking you to endorse this as actually what happened. Let's assume that Mr. Roberts has it correctly, that we got lots of kids, whether hundreds, I don't know, 20, 30. And let's assume further that there is some legitimate reason to be concerned that the kids are going to spill out into the street. And I assume you have no basis to contest his statement that during the time he's been at the school, they have two kids killed and five kids hit by cars in similar circumstances. What do you make of that? That is to say, let's assume, in a sense, entirely favorably to your position, that these kids are upset specifically because of the message. They're upset by the manner in which it is delivered. And we are endangering the lives of these children given their reaction to it. Do you still get to do this?
And again, Your Honor, I mean, that's a very hard, you know, hard case.
Yeah,
I think that
may be the case, right, we have in front of us, actually.
Well, I don't think it necessarily is.
But I want to know, what if that is the case we have in front of us? What then?
Well, and again, Your Honor, it goes to do we have a heckler's veto or do we not have a heckler's veto?
Can I finish?
You had multiple law enforcement officers there, and my response
to
that
you're not answering.
I'm
sorry, you're not answering my question. Before the officers get there, because by the time the officers get there, school has started. Before the officers get there, let us assume, as Mr. Roberts states, there are numerous kids on the sidewalk, whether they're hundreds or whether they're in the 20s, I don't know. But let's assume that in Mr. Roberts' judgment, who's apparently been there a long time, that this is creating the sort of physical hazard to these kids that has in the past resulted in two deaths and five accidents. Do you still get to do what you're doing?
You know, I don't know how you get around the content base. Then
you'd
have to say my answer would be the content that would be empowering the hecklers in the veto, and that might be
but
if it's different, if it's because of the traffic situation and so forth, I mean that might be your, you know, you may need to permit, or bases that are not on the content. But if your hypothetical is that their reaction is plainly to the message and take it away from the trucks and make it the leafleter.
Even if the reaction is to the message, at the point at which you have an actual dangerous situation, presumably the police can clear the area. Whether they can arrest somebody or charge them with something is another question, but presumably they can get everybody out of there, including you, I would think.
That might be the case, and that's why I was trying to finish up the hypothetical, which how, I mean, the police respond, they saw the traffic, but the answer to that is no, you can never return back with your truck, so that you're in violation of the statute.
But assuming that that's what the truck did this time, it's probably a perfectly reasonable thing to think that that's what's going to happen when the truck comes back next time, at least to this school and at that time. I mean, you know, things do happen over and over again. So, why are you? I think what you're telling me is, and it's a tough case.
It is, Your Honor.
I think what you're telling me is that if the reaction to the students and to the message and the manner in which it is delivered endangers the students' lives, you may nonetheless do it. Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, I think you're saying you can't have those content-based restrictions on speech.
I think I asked a yes or no question. Is the answer?
I would say that's a problem under the First Amendment for making those sorts of restrictions.
Does the record, in fact, show that you continue to do this after at your client?
I want to get to, Your Honor, there was the only, I think it was the day after this incident, and it was before the executive director had been informed about what had gone on and that they'd been actually threatened with a criminal prosecution. That one, because they have multiple trucks that go out on planned routines. They went one time, and then after that, the executive director, after looking at what happened here, looking at the statute, said, we can't do this anymore because I got volunteers, and I'm not going to place them in jeopardy of being arrested. This is a criminal statute. So they have, in fact, stopped doing it. They went one time after that, but since then they have not been to any of the schools, the middle schools or the high schools.
Is this group just in L.A., a local group, or does it operate elsewhere?
They're the center. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Does it operate elsewhere or just operates right
now? Yeah, they operate all across the nation. They've got several.
So they do this elsewhere?
They do.
Are there lawsuits elsewhere, then?
There's lawsuits not on, on this issue. They've never had any problems with the middle schools or the high schools. This is the first one that it came up. But not in anywhere else has there been any problems. They have aircraft that fly banners, as a matter of fact.
Do other states have statutes, such as California?
They may, Your Honor, but nobody's ever invoked it against them. This is the first time. This is the first time this has ever happened.
Can you check that out? See if other states?
No, because our view, Your Honor, that they can't. You can't do this. You can't, because their focus is on what they can control, which is obviously what the heckler's veto is all about.
I asked you whether. You've researched whether other states have statutes similar to California statutes.
We have not, Your Honor. Obviously, Grainard, I mean, there would be something, I guess, akin to that in Illinois. We'd know from Grainard, but I haven't done
the Grainard statute talks about noise or disturbance, right? So theoretically, somebody could try and apply it to this.
Which is what I think they're trying to do here, which is why we think it runs afoul of Grainard itself.
You know, I hate to be a pest about this,
yes,
but I think I asked a yes or no question, so I'll ask it again, and I think I want a yes or a no. Is it your position that if it turns out to be true, as Mr. Roberts states, that there were numerous students on the sidewalk, and in his judgment it created a traffic hazard similar to that which had led to 5 automobile accidents with kids as pedestrians and 2 deaths, that you nonetheless get to, your clients nonetheless get to do this despite the danger that this poses? That's a yes or a no.
And that's based on the content of the message.
They're responding to the message and the manner in which it is delivered.
They can't restrict it based.
Your answer is that is your position, yes or no?
You know, I can't read the case law or any other way.
You can say yes or you can say no.
Yes, they can't stop it if that's...
I'm saying, is that your position?
My position is yes, they cannot stop it.
Even though we have that physical danger and the judgment of the school administrator that might even include death?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, part of that would be that you've got traffic hazards there. Because when school's about to start, especially in school of middle type school, you have many parents driving their kids to school too.
And that's why it's hard to answer those sort of hypotheticals, because now you're talking about traffic concerns. If there's a traffic concern and they limit the size of trucks or the number of vehicles, like they have only one parade down, those are content neutral bases for making the regulations. But if it is just a response to the message, you can't do that. So it kind of slips between, okay, do we have a traffic issue? And that there's
not. You're going to have a traffic issue if you're going to do it while kids are going to school. You're not going to have a traffic issue if you're going to do it while kids are already in school.
You may or may not, depending on the school and its configuration. I mean, even in this case, I don't think there was. I mean, the video shows that there wasn't that traffic, the traffic concerns. But is there ever a situation where there might be, you know, a school is built where there's just a single road and you only can allow one car coming in, or there may be some basis that's not the message as to why they say, well, you know, we may have some difficulty with. I mean, actually, some places they restrict the size of the vehicles and they check that out. If they had a restriction on the size of the vehicles because of those concerns,
the police officers or the deputy sheriffs tell your clients that they were there because of the message.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, that was here's. I mean, definitely when.
I mean, they found the message obnoxious.
See if I can find the exact. And Deputy Darling was asked in particular, because all they had was that statement that I read previously. He was asked, during that time you were following those vehicles, during that 5-minute period of time. So he actually, the police officers actually traveled with the vehicles for an entire loop around the school. And this is on page 9 and 10 of my brief. Was there anything that you observed that would lead you to believe that the plaintiffs were in violation of section 626.8? Answer, yes. Question, what was that? Answer, due to the nature of the graphic pictures on the side of the panel truck. Question, and what is it about the nature of the pictures? Answer, they're just very graphic and kind of in your face of an unborn aborted fetus. All this, you know, disturbance, it just wasn't there. It wasn't there. It was plainly the pictures that they were trying to suppress. I mean, it's none of these other cases. It's not the case that Judge Fletcher suggests. That's the case. There was no disturbance other than they didn't like these pictures and they told them to go away. And that's the deputy who followed them around for 5 minutes, not talking about hundreds of kids in the streets and
but
so forth.
But by the time the deputies get there, the kids are in school.
I think when they stopped them.
No, I watched the time on the video. I mean, it's right there. No, by the time the deputies get there, the kids are in school. I mean, the key time was the previous half hour.
And the security vehicle with the camera and everything was showing
similar
to what Deputy Darling just
But what the deputies saw is not probative as to whether or not there were kids on the sidewalk and what dangers might have been posed by that.
Well,
they weren't there at that time.
It certainly shows there wasn't much of an effort to get the kids into the school during that period of time, and the video certainly refutes the claims by...
Well, you see, I'm not sure how much it does. Maybe that means it has to go back for a trial of fact on that question, because the video is every time the truck passes, and of course that means most of the time they're not in front of the school. As the truck passes the front of the school, you have the peripheral vision on the sidewalk, but I mean there's an awful lot of stuff that's not picked up by the video. So,
and if I just made one comment, I know I've gone way over here with the reason why Mr. Roberts is still in here. If you look at the statute itself, it's kind of drafted, I think, in a unique way, and that in fact empowers school officials to be an enforcement agent of this statute, because that school official himself can come out and order people to leave under penalty of this statute. Granted, they'd have to call the police to come to the arrest.
Required. That's one thing I didn't understand. As I understand it, the sheriffs could have asked him to leave.
They did, and they went up and grabbed Mr. Roberts to come down and read him.
They didn't need to do that.
He probably didn't need to do that because the statute allows either one of them, but certainly the statute empowers the school official to be the enforcement agent for this, and so that's why we think it's appropriate to also include school officials in their official capacity for the injunctive relief, because the statute does empower public school officials to enforce the statute. So that's my answer there. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As a matter of fact,